Stand and pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Pat.
Bowman.
Present.
Shute. McNaughton. Moblo.
Here.
Needhammer.
Here.
Nemechek.
Here.
Place.
Here.
Jeff Ross. Monica Ross.
Here.
As Pat mentioned, Jeff called in and announced Larry did a request to excuse.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to excuse Larry and Jeff.
Okay. I've got a motion to excuse Larry and Jeff.
Second.
A motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Working on consent agenda, the approval of minutes from June 21st, 2021.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as presented.
And I'll second it.
A motion and a second, approval of minutes from our June meeting. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
Can I abstain, is that okay?
That is perfectly acceptable.
I didn't know what that's what I said, five.
I have done a mini key.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to hearing. Citizens present on non-agenda items. Don't see anyone here. Reports, officers, board sustaining committee.
Nothing tonight.
Nothing for tonight, okay. Let's go on to unfinished business, future land use map update.
Okay, unfortunately, screens in front of us aren't working very well. The one in back is sort of a map on there. I incorporated some of the changes that we talked about, like the mixed use area. Basically, Mono, State Street, the Rotary Park, and the pass around the south side there.
Yeah.
Some additional changes that I incorporated as I looked at it. The old map has the school offices and the library, and there's a couple churches around there in that area. That was professional office on the future land use map. It seemed more appropriate to be community service. So that's that blue area.
Don't see a lot of those services changing over.
No, exactly. So it'd probably be, stay the same for a long period of time. And then I looked at the historical residential district and basically made that district fit the historical district better, because the way it was, it took in the two houses to the west that weren't in the district. So I corrected that. And then, let's see. There were the neighborhood commercial zones. And one was where the flower shop is on State Point Avenue. And the other was just a random location. And the intent of that district was to be allowed for like a node of Senate, like a local neighborhood commercial use, like a mom and pop store or something.
Oh, okay.
That may find a spot somewhere out in the neighborhood. One, you know, I don't know how realistic that is and happening. And two, we didn't really have a commercial district that translated to a neighborhood residential. So I eliminated that, and basically, you know, the only change, you know, is really the flower shop. It's right now it's non-conforming because it's semi-residential. So, and our ordinance has some pretty flexible language in the non-conforming section, where Planning Commission does have some ability to look at case-by-case situations and either allow them to continue or expand or change uses somewhat.
Sure.
So that seemed like more appropriate for that particular one. And then just the, you know, finding a note somewhere in zoning it commercial in the future, I didn't really see it.
We didn't really have anything like a flower shop anywhere else.
Right, you know, and I don't see, you know, personally, I don't see, you know, a 7-Eleven or some grocery store or something like that being popped up in the neighborhoods. So I didn't think that. So that district was eliminated. And then as we talked about, the large lot residential was combined with the rural clustering district. And the mixed use district was kind of developed. And that was basically the professional office district that was kind of morphed into that. And to provide that kind of transition zone where you can have houses and, you know, light, you know, office or service kind of uses that about the same size and bulk as a, you know, typical home. So you can see those transitioning back and forth. So those are the changes that I did. So I'm bringing it back for discussion. And then if there's any other changes you want to make, I can incorporate those. If you're satisfied with the map as presented, then we can move to the next step.
I had two questions. One, I noticed that the new building that Barbara put up at the old Gray Acres we're zoning that historical district, even though...
Oh, no, that you're correct. That should be part of the CBD.
Okay.
And that's the way it's zoned.
I noticed that.
Make that correct.
And then back behind... oh, where Moki sells firewood and Randy Cruzell has his yard and all that stuff. Is large lot residential really a good zoning?
Those are houses where the large lot residential. All the other is industrial.
Yeah.
So these are houses here.
Those are actually...
That's up on the hill.
Okay.
Over that. So this is... all the industrial.
Okay, well, okay, industrial, and that's where those like Moki and them are.
Yes.
But right to the right of it there, and those are actually houses up on there.
Yeah, that's a house there.
Oh, that's why it's staying that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Answers my question.
Sure. And again, this isn't. We're not looking at rezoning areas. This is just a map of what we'd like to see in the future.
Right. Again, I'm just curious as to why we wanted to see it that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the reason there is it's pretty unlikely that that industrial district could be, you know, incorporated in here because you've got probably about 60-foot
hill. Up that hill that you drive in from by Challenge Mountain up the hill.
And that's a
private
road.
All right. Just need
the plow, so.
Yep. Scott, looks like the consumer's power area is...
Blue,
community service?
Yeah.
So that's what we hope it will be in the future? Mm-hmm. Would it be community recreation?
If you think that's a more appropriate... They've kind of consolidated their operations to this spot, so I've seen them being there for a while. But
yeah.
You know, to say it would transform, you know, and be included into the Riverside Park area, you know, that's definitely foreseeable.
Well, then, wouldn't it be green?
Well, if that's what you'd like, yeah. That's what you guys do.
Well, and then you've got the factory on the lakefront the same way.
Right.
I mean, community service would be, I mean, if that's churches and...
More administrative and
kind
of offices, that kind of public.
Tom, back behind there, it's not really a great recreation space, is it?
Which one?
Back behind
consumers.
That one's pretty wet.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Pretty wet, swampy.
I mean, even the park along further down, it I mean, I know there's kayak launches and stuff, but it's not well mowed. It's kind of left to.
I think it's more to the community.
Well, then should it be commercial or industrial or?
The Riverside Park?
No.
Consumers. Consumers.
I think you're right. I think it should be just community recreational, just continue down the river all the way up to the bridge. It could obviously be something that could be used in the future as community service, but mm-hmm. right now I think it would be just simpler. Does anyone else have any thought on that? Or?
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, environmentally, it would be better as wetlands, even though it's a park. But it'd be also pretty cool to use that building somehow if they But they're not going to leave. So what are we, I guess
the building recreation. I'd like to set the way it is.
And so, you know, 20 years.
Well, and my thought, Tom, is that in 20 years or whatever they're looking at, if it was community recreation, like it is all down the river, then it would be more of a reason for us to develop more stuff on the river and maintain it and say, hey, look, we've got this long stretch that's all could be used as.
Have you been up to the 6 Mile Lake St. Clair along Ellsworth East Road?
Not recently.
Okay, it's a very small park that has two different locations for kayak launches. And it's along, obviously, a wetlands, but they have a beautiful boardwalk, a very short trail system that is made for kayak launching only. This little area right here would be phenomenal to have something put in like that down the road. Like if we were looking at, you know, like
taking out?
Yeah, or for if consumers were to leave and we were to develop it to add something, like he said, it's wetlands, what do you do with it? Well, this is perfect. You just use what you have and expand on what's already there, you know, for the purpose of walking, you know, launching a kayak. You go there now, you have nowhere to pull up. Everything's chained off at this point. You literally have to get out on the road to haul your kayaks down, walk through waist-deep grass, you know, and then try and launch a kayak.
Yeah.
So I think it should be that community recreation all the way down as well.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement.
Yeah,
we're not rezoning it.
We're not.
Although somebody comes along and wants to buy that building and put in something that's appropriate, they can do that.
Exactly. And right now it's not conforming, right? And it is residential there. Or office.
Yeah, right now it's not conforming, so this would be consistent with the zoning.
Okay.
And what about the factory site next to the open space?
Well, right now,
it's kind of the same way. It's between a couple of greens, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't think they have any intent to move, but I think that would be a great opportunity if it ever could become public. I mean, that would be a pretty significant stretch that's open to the public.
I agree.
And there's properties across the street mm-hmm. are, you're going to have as mixed use? It's hard to tell the colors.
No, across the street, along Lake, that's all commercial, yeah. General commercial.
Okay.
And I think that looks really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine.
Because of. Getting the commercial off, the, or industrial off the lake is huge. Would be huge.
How would that, I mean, obviously, if Honeywell wanted to sell and it's zoned community recreation, is that going to hinder them tremendously when they want to try and sell?
Well, right now it's not zoned community service or even community recreation.
Right now it's zoned waterfront marina district.
Yeah.
Waterfront what?
Waterfront marina district.
Oh, okay.
which is like what on Waterways.
A good real estate investor would look at the future use map of a municipal area when making a purchase like that at that level.
Yeah.
Just to get an idea what, you know, their time of that purchase is.
Well, I'm just wondering if our change of zoning will hinder them.
We're not changing land. But, I mean, obviously, if they're looking at it, then they start inquiring as to why we want it to be that way and find out some more history on it.
I mean, ideally, if the city could own it, it would be like, well, wow!
We've been waiting for that for years.
It's, yeah.
It's not being looked at.
And across the road, the general...
I heard changing that as commercial is good.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes, Scott.
I have a question in regards to the small sliver of blue up where I'm guessing is the Waterworks building. I thought we had a plan for that state level to develop that into a park, so wouldn't that be community recreation and not community service?
Well, the building is functionally part of the water system, so I think that's why that was meant to be represented.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is grounded, but probably a little big, so it probably can be reduced.
And reduced to the size of the building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but the pumping station is behind it, though.
It's in the building.
What?
Oh,
well,
yeah. I thought there was, wasn't there a big well?
There's a
well
way back.
Yeah.
Offset.
The building is on this whole big parcel.
Yeah.
So that room goes back to the wells.
And then is Foxtrot owned by the house? Or by the Foxtrot little house that's down? It's in green. Is that part of the city property then?
Foxtrot.
There's a little house down front.
That little greenhouse? Oh, yeah, I wonder if you want
it. It says Foxtrot on the front.
Oh, yeah. That is private.
Hartwell?
Yeah, he passed away, right?
Yeah, it's his family. The kids own it.
Right. It'd
be wonderful to add it to the park.
Okay, I'm lost. Where are you?
Pardon me?
I'm lost. What piece
it's of that? It's that little greenhouse right by the 1910 building. Hartwell used to own it, now his kids do. And it has no running water, so he used to always go to the 1910 building.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Too much information.
Reduce the size of that service area there.
Definition of use for mixed use works out really well. Is there any other recommendations or suggestions on this?
Okay.
Scott, what's the next step? Is this take to the city commission to adopt it into?
No. Have to have a public hearing, and then it has to be approved by the commission for distribution. And it's distributed to all the adjacent municipalities, the county, and the planning agencies. And they have a review period of, I believe, 63 days. And then it comes back, and it's formally adopted and incorporated.
Okay. Do you have any additions or questions before that starts? Okay. Thank you, Scott. Let's move on to new business, meeting time discussion.
At the last meeting, it was brought to Chris's attention of the time of the meeting and wanting to add that to the agenda for discussion, so it has. Typically, every year, the Planning Commission adopts a calendar, November, December. Also, in the bylaws, it specifically has the time and day of the meetings. So you have
bylaws, and then also adopt the new calendar. If you wanted to change.
And this would take effect in January then?
It's going to take effect anytime you want.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Change the bylaws to do that, so it's going to take some time. My personal thought on this is that I don't think changing the time is going to change a lot. The majority of our meetings are like this. We have public, we ask public to come, and they don't typically come. When it's been bigger issues or it's very much involved in the community, we usually put the time back. We make for the time later that we start. We've done that a few times to allow people to be here. And I think letting them know that that is an option, or letting us know, hey, I want to be here, but I can't be here till this. We've also moved agenda items around because people weren't here for things. I really do think that changing the time later doesn't help. Not for the majority of the meetings. I feel like it just kind of, and I can be wrong. Obviously, we've gotten some input from the public saying, hey, we would like to see this, but at the same time, I don't see people here. So I know a lot of people that say things, but they still won't show up. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm the one that brought it up, mm-hmm. I think. And there was some sort of nasty comments online. Yeah, 5 o'clock working people can't come. And I just think it doesn't look good. I would propose we move it to 5:30. If you look at the other planning commissions in the area, we are the earliest. Nobody else meets at 5 o'clock. Harbor Springs and East Jordan meet at 5:30. Charlevoix meets at 6. Petoskey meets at 7. I think it looks bad for us to be the earliest. 5:30, if you work till 5 like a lot of people do, it's a little easier to get here. I know it's not going to be a big deal. We're going to get this kind of crowd most of the time anyway. I know. It just looks better, and people brought it up, and why not?
Well, since I spoke up last month, I'll speak up again. Are we moving it for our convenience so that we can get here on time? As working parents and a couple else, we said we don't care, we're retired. But, or are we moving it for the public? I think as Aaron said, the public will be here if it's 5 or 5:30 if it's an issue. But what I said last month was it would be nice to have some data to make a decision based on some data. You know, when you say on Facebook, some people said, you know, they're sure wish they could be at 5:30. Well,
nobody said a time. They just said 5 o'clock wasn't worker friendly.
That's right. Correct.
Right.
Thank you. But I'm saying, how many people said that? You know, one or two or three on Facebook? On is that enough data to change the time? And I realize what you're saying, it's just the image, but a lot of times, I said this last month, families would rather have a 5 o'clock meeting so that by 6:37 they can go to t-ball games and basketball games and homework and dinner and everything else happens at the family level in the evening. 5:30 starts encroaching evening time, 5 o'clock more encroaches. You go right from work, right to a meeting, and you're home in time to cook dinner or to go to your kids' or grandkids' events. So, you know, to me, I don't care. I hate to change just because a little bit of negative chatter on Facebook.
I'd rather. Well, and it was not very many people.
It wasn't very
many. And right now, there's an election coming. And so there is this group of X number of people, anything about the city, people jump on it and try to find a reason to gripe about it because they have an agenda, and I realize that. But I thought they had a good point, you know. Mm-hmm. And these other communities meet at 5:30 or 6. I just think it's a small thing. And we have had people, our own planning commission members, have had trouble getting here. Two of them today, but one of them it's because of a work thing. And if we retry to, we haven't had a lot of success recruiting people to be on the planning commission. And if they're looking at, well, it's going to be hard for me to make it, I guess I won't throw my hat in the ring because I got to work till 5 and I doubt if I can make the meetings. So it's not for my convenience. I prefer 5. I like getting home and, you know, getting home early and all that sort of thing too. But I think it would be of a small amount more useful for us to get for our own commissioners and recruiting future commissioners. And it just looks a little better. That's all.
I agree with Jim's comments. I think it looks better. And it looks like we're not trying to exclude people by having an early meeting. So I agree. I think it looks better, and I think possibly we might get more people to want to or be willing to throw their hat in the ring for a position.
For a long time, we haven't had a position open for more than a couple months. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where the people not willing to throw in their hat in the ring. We've been pretty good about keeping a relatively full board compared to other boards. But you're right. I just think that it's either way. I'm okay with it either way, but I don't think it's going to do much. And I think that it's going to be a lot of work to change it and then have it not do anything.
I don't think it's going to
have
big crowds come to our meeting.
No.
I don't either.
I just think it looks better to the public.
Okay.
That we have a meeting at a time that is user-friendly if there's an issue.
Okay.
I would say, I guess I'll throw out my opinion. I agree with the piece of the conversation that Tom had last time as far as we could change it to 7, not going to get the engagement there, right? 6, not going to get the engagement there. But where we do live, I think 5:30 would be a better option just for that working class, because I do have that understanding that, you know, 9 to 5 is the most average timetable. And especially in the winter time, for individuals that are trying to travel, I think that 30-minute cushion time would be beneficial. I don't think it's going to be a different result, because realistically, the public engages the planning commission on case-by-case scenarios, in my opinion. And if someone has, you know, an intent or a need to attend a meeting, I don't think 30 minutes is going to be the deciding factor whether they attend or do not attend. But if we're going to look at the, you know, I understand it might be one or two individuals that made the complaint or that have this agenda of making these complaints on social media. Taking away their ammo would be beneficial to an extent, and taking away those complaint abilities. But on top of that, I think just being reflective on the 9 to 5, especially in the winter time. Me personally, I mold my own schedule, so that's, you know, an option. I mean, that's regardless to me, the time doesn't really matter whatsoever, actually. But I do know from personal experience, if I was talking a year from, you know, a year ago, I would not have the ability to be here at 5. Without having to manipulate my work schedule.
What about an option of mixed use with the technology of doing the Zoom meetings? Would it be possible to potentially use some of that?
I think that would be the most beneficial scenario, is utilizing technology.
I don't think we're there yet to have that capability.
Just basically having people attend meetings remotely.
Yeah. I mean, and the reason I say that is coming from, you know, my perspective. You talked about kids' events, you know, if my kid is playing t-ball and I know they're not going to be out there, well, I'm not missing the meeting, but I can still be present. You know what I mean? Or perhaps I'm a single parent and I can't find a babysitter and I have, you know, as a community member, really want to be here but don't want to drag my 5 kids in here. You know what I mean? Like, it could be beneficial to those that may not meet the average, you know, ideal for coming to a meeting. I mean, I know I drag my kids in several times over the years I've lived here. But, you know, not everyone's children can be well-behaved for an adult meeting for an hour, you know, so.
And I think that's great, but I think that's something we can change for the future. I just don't think, like Scott said, I don't think we just have the technology yet or the manpower to make that work every time.
I agree 100% that, you know, I think it was easier to participate during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and...
The numbers reflect that as well. I mean, across the board, municipal, local government meeting, you know, sure. I've attended a few different ones.
I mean, it doesn't have to be that complicated. Tim is recording every city commission meeting. He puts up a iPhone and on a tripod, and you know, it's not the greatest experience. You're not zooming in on the speaker, and maybe you can't hear that well, but it's an effort at least. And I think the city commission and the planning commission should move towards that.
It provides transparency and community involvement at the ease of your own convenience.
Yes.
Right. And I mean, the numbers show for themselves. I don't know your experience with social media. I know you're a social media contractor for the city, but deep diving those numbers and looking at the analytics that they have on those pages is pretty eye-opening as far as the viewership and from, you know, post.
Well, how many people watched the last meeting that you recorded?
Over 1,000?
Yeah, right. So we should move that direction, and I don't think it needs to be part of this motion, and I think, you know, it's all about administrative support, but
ultimately, I think it's going to be a city commission.
Yes, exactly, but I think you should convey that message that we feel strongly that should, the city should start moving towards that for at least these two bodies.
That would be the long-term impactful solution, in my opinion, because we're talking about 30 minutes difference between 5 and 5:30 on the planning board. You got the airport board, the rec park board. I mean, you have so many different local government meetings. Long-term and actual impactful solution. The people that are in social media with this agenda, you know, being rude, being negative, you would take away all ammo they could utilize.
Harbor Springs puts all their meetings on YouTube.
Yep.
You know, and it's very amateur. Mm-hmm. But it's there.
Well, but that's after the fact.
Yeah. No. Live.
Oh, they do it live.
Yes. Okay. Are those live that you can zoom into?
Or no.
They can participate.
They're just being broadcast.
Yeah, so there's.
But if you make a comment on YouTube, you can comment on something.
Right.
And but the chairman of the meeting says, do we have any comments on YouTube? And then they read them.
Right.
And then they respond to them.
So it's live.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's the way you are supposed to do it, because you have to have the ability to engage everybody fairly and the same, and having a YouTube, I'm not sure if that meets that criteria.
Well, you know, they're a third of the size of Boyne City, and right. Their budget is a third of the size of Boyne City.
Right, but more, we would have to be able to authenticate that the people talking and saying the message are part of the community, or who they are, what they say they are. And we can't, I mean, yeah. Otherwise you'll be chasing a bunch of things that don't have anything to do with anything.
In reality, that doesn't happen.
Okay.
You know, it's like this. You know, five people are going to watch the meeting. I mean, it's not that great, but if you want to, you can.
So, I agree with the transparency. I agree with Tim filming. But as Tim said, there's two different issues. Transparency and filming is one issue. Time is another issue. So the airport board, the Parks and Rec board, they start at 6. Commission meetings are at noon and at 7. Airport boards are whatever. Main Street boards are at 8:30 a.m. I don't see the relationship between filming versus starting time. I don't see the relationship. So it's back to Parks and Rec begins at 6. Do they get more people at their meeting? No. Do they have trouble filling their board because of lack of participation? Not currently. So again, I just don't want to make a change because we're making a change. I want to make a change that makes sense. And again, as Tim said, half hour is not a big deal. We can all adjust our schedules. But the transparency issue we've talked about as a city commission, and really the pandemic really made us talk about it. We found out that yes, we had more participation with Zoom, and that was a good thing. And so Scott's right, the way Harbor Springs does it, according to our legal advice, is not the proper way of doing it. The proper way to do it, to get active participation from the people that are watching, is going to take about $10,000 worth of technology that we don't have currently. That's what our tech people told us. So it's not that we're against it at a city commission level, we're just trying to figure our way through it. But two different issues, time versus taping the meetings.
Well, two different issues. I'd like to make a motion that we change the planning commission meetings to 5:30 p.m.
I'll second it.
Still on Monday, still on same whatever day they're discussion. On.
Okay, but I think you want to frame your motion into that you were amending the bylaws, specifically F5A, that identifies the meeting time.
I agree to that amendment to my motion.
I think another commissioner would have to propose that.
You would have to propose it again.
The amendment's motion.
Okay. I'm sorry, are you saying a different commissioner would have to second it or would have to propose the amendment?
Propose the friendly amendment.
Okay.
All right, I'll propose
there we go.
That we change the meeting time.
No, you're making a friendly amendment to his proposal
to
change the bylaws to be 5:30, which is
F5A
in our bylaws.
I would like to make a motion to amend 5A in our bylaws to allow for our meetings to be held at 5:30 instead of 5 p.m. on the same day as is currently listed.
That was a new motion. That's what it sounded like. That was a new motion, so I do need a second for that.
I'll second it.
Okay, got a motion and a second.
Still need a two-thirds vote.
Roll call, Pat?
Monica Ross?
Yes.
Bowman?
Yes.
Moblo?
Yes.
Needhammer?
No.
Nemechek?
Yes.
Place?
No.
Are you through with two-thirds?
Two-thirds,
yeah.
So you probably want to adopt a new calendar as well, changing the meeting times to 5:30.
Do we have to make a motion for that, or is that something that's going to be a new agenda in the next month?
Well, I think since you're changing that meeting, I would adopt a new calendar, just changing the meeting.
All right, so at this point, I would need a motion to adopt a new calendar and changing all of our times to 5:30. Effective for next month.
I would so move that we adopt a new calendar, changing our meetings to 5:30.
I will second.
Yes.
Question. So, the first motion that we made, does that take effect immediately?
Yeah.
Immediately?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought we had to go to get a bylaw change. It took some time.
No.
Okay.
Roll call, Pat.
Sorry, did you second?
Yeah, Monica second.
Okay.
Bowman?
Yes.
Moblo?
Yes.
Needhammer?
Yes.
Nemechek?
Yes.
Place?
Yes.
Monica Ross?
So it's effective immediately.
Yep. So new calendar and bylaws will be amended and new times will be 5:30.
Pat, could you make sure that especially Skylar, Jeff, and Larry know, obviously, send an email out to everybody who probably does.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to recommendation for Planning Commission reappointment of Nicole.
Yes, her term expired in May, and we just caught it that But no, no worries, you can continue on even though your term has expired.
We need a public hearing on this?
Scott, we do need a...
You need to make a recommendation to the city commission.
So I would leave me a recommendation from the member to the city commission. I'd like to recommend...
I'll second.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
And do I need to attend to that?
That's usually on the consent agenda.
Thank you for catching that, Scott. Staff report, please.
A couple items. At the city commission meeting last week, there was a number of residents that came together to complain about short-term rental near their neighborhood, and were requesting the city take some kind of action. Most of those complaints were nuisance related kind of complaints, noise, parties, that kind of thing. Previously this year, when the city was going through their budget, they did identify and set aside some money for doing research on short-term rentals in the way of obtaining an inventory through post-compliance, as they're now known as grant. So at that meeting, they added that as an agenda item and wanted to move forward with that contract to with Granicus to develop this inventory. So we're going through that steps right now. It's probably going to take several months to get it because they have to accumulate the data and then we have to integrate it into our assessment operation. And then we're going to have to analyze it and come back and say, okay, this is what we got. But we're moving in that path. So I don't know when we'll get it, but basically it's a year-long contract, and they review this every 3 to 5 days and update it. When I first engaged these folks last October, and they did an assessment for the city, they identified 251 unique listings. That doesn't mean there's 251 rentals. There may be multiple listings for each the same property. When I spoke with them in May to get a quote, that number went down to 221. It kind of surprised me a little bit that actually there's less now than there were before.
Because this is just an initial search that they did.
Well, they review pretty comprehensively. They go over like 60 different websites and they accumulate this. And they say they're like 99% complete. So they believe they do get most.
Are we going to look at cross-referencing those listings or addresses with complaints?
Well, that was one of the questions at the city commission meeting is, is there any data about complaints generated from short-term rentals? And Chief Spade was going to look to see if they could identify, any correlation there.
Yeah, when people call for a complaint, all the information is taken down.
Right. So, but...
You can FOIA that very easily.
Right. But him being able to identify it was a short-term rental was the issue.
Excellent.
Or was the people living there. So how to delineate that was a little problematic. But going forward, I'm probably going to pay more attention to those kinds of complaints. Personally, I receive very few complaints, maybe 1-2 a year in regards to short-term rentals. I don't know if people don't call me in regards to that or they just call the police, but very rare that I get complaints out. So once we get that data, we'll map it out and we'll see where we're at, kind of get an idea. And then identify, okay, do we need to take some kind of action? We're going to have to identify the problem. And that's where the complaints come in. What is the problem that we're trying to solve before you start trying to develop an ordinance to deal with something? Say what are the issues we're trying to solve here. So this is going to be a part of it. I'll keep you apprised on that moving forward.
I have a question. In one of the meetings previously, we talked about doing an ordinance. suggested that we not go down that road because at the state level, there was potential for them to say, we can't do that.
I was just going to touch on that. And so right now, there's bills in front of the House and the Senate that basically limit what a municipality could do if they're passed. It's basically you'd have to treat a short-term rental just like a single-family home. There's some allowances to control for nuisances and occupancy and that kind of thing. So, you know, you could address some issues with it, but if they pass in their current form, you're really not going to be able to do too much. So I haven't heard, you know.
Is there an example of a complaint that was made at the meeting or that you heard of?
Yeah.
That would be limited by the bills that would be passed?
Yeah, I think the occupancy one, because they have, you know, a specific number of people that could have.
Right.
So that would probably be one of the bigger changes for that.
Now, the International Property Maintenance Code that we just passed last year, I do know one of the reading through that document, there is occupancy level requirements according to square footage. So would that not be a useful piece of material?
No, because you can't restrict the family size. And so saying, you know, this house can only fit so many, you're basically saying you can handle a family so big.
Right.
You can't do that. So, you know, for a rental like that, you know, you can pretty well easily determine whether it's a family or not, even though that definition has grown to include lots of people that you wouldn't normally think are family.
But I think the biggest thing is that when people are complaining is they want to have some course of action or some person to contact.
Right.
Even if the recommendation is contact the police to do this, it would be nice to be able to have some person that is the person that people call, so that way it's something that can be resolved, or at least pointed in the right direction. And I know you can just say, hey, look at the website, but that doesn't help.
Yeah, and that's, you know, through some kind of licensing or registration, you can create that list and those contacts, mm-hmm. and then be able to contact the owner and identify the problems.
And the police chief at the meeting encouraged people to call.
Call him.
A lot of them said, oh, we didn't want to call the police.
And that's the problem.
Right.
They want to complain, but they don't want to call the police to have it taken care of.
Well,
right.
I mean, we have one in our neighborhood.
You know,
that
when you call the police, they say, what's your emergency?
Yeah.
Well, too many cars parked, you know.
Yeah, that's a problem with the one in our neighborhood. That they, you know, it's a six-bedroom house, and so they have a million cars parked in the public parking area at the boat, at the beach. And yeah, they're noisy, yet it's registered as for tax purposes as a single or as a primary residence.
Well, and that's what people were saying.
Yeah.
You guys are running businesses.
And that's my biggest issue.
That's my issue right there.
Is that we're spending this kind of money, and if we're spending, you know, this $6,298, whatever it is on this contract, I think the most important part, because I personally know at least six short-term rentals in Boyne City, out-of-state owners, 100%.
Homestead.
Homestead property.
Yeah, this one is Homestead. I went and checked it, and it's all summer long. It's a vacation rental.
Right, and it's all public information. I mean, I could verify that
just
utilizing the county website.
Right.
And pulling up, you know, the partial numbers on that.
Well, I resent it because they're paying 35% less than taxes.
Correct. And if you look at it.
You know.
Yeah.
Scott Granicus, is that pretty much the company that a lot of the communities around here have used?
Yeah, they're kind of the major player in the field. There's some others. And I obtained a quote from another firm, and they only offered 2-year contracts, and it was twice as much.
And was this money in your budget?
It was budgeted.
Yes,
because people were complaining on Facebook that, oh, I could do that in one day, which I think is ludicrous. But
I've done that over a period of months, and it is tedious.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
And then it changes every day, like you
said.
Well,
that, and identifying the address. You can get all the pictures you want, but sometimes nailing down what house it is And I think people are getting more savvy, because before, I always find an address number on the house, and I just know the town, so I was able to, you know, create an inventory. But you know, lately, you're seeing very vague pictures from the outside, and mostly inside pictures, so you never see an address, and so you really have to, you know, pin it down where that is located.
Some of the city commissioners mentioned they had read articles that Charlevoix had a good ordinance and everyone seemed happy with it. Everyone, yeah, meaning property owners and neighbors.
Yeah.
No?
I'm the one who said that.
Yeah.
Well, come on, Tom.
Not everybody's happy.
No.
And if the state passes their ruling, Charlevoix...
The governor going to sign that?
The Charlevoix becomes obsolete.
But then that's right. The thing, you know. Okay, they passed an ordinance to address these nuisances, but like the police chief said, and I said, where are the complaints? We were getting the complaints, so, you know,
and
there was a need there, was never really seen.
I think we need to approach it, if we go that route, for parking, based on...
Yeah, and that's one of the nuisances.
And noise complaints.
Well,
those are the two, to me, that are the most critical to neighbors in the area.
Occupancy is a big deal. Somebody said there's a house in their neighborhood, a three-bedroom house, that they advertise for 14, it sleeps 14, you know. So
that's my two cents on short-term rental is, if we're going, it's a two double-edged sword. A lot of people bring up the conversation because they want housing availability. And that is the point of the conversation. The second point of the conversation is the nuisance. I believe an individual that, you know, is making a complaint at the city commission meeting but fails to call the police at the time of the event of the complaint is shooting themselves in the foot, and they're not looking for an impactful solution. They're just looking to voice their opinion. I think there's a lot of ordinances out there that Kevin, I think Chief Spade even hit on it, where several of the complaints were already illegal. There's already ordinances against those complaints and those nuisance issues. The biggest aspect of these bills, and if they do get passed, I understand it's going to completely tie municipal local government's hands and being able to pass ordinances. But if the ordinance, you know, if it's a nuisance issue, whether it's a short-term rental or a long-term resident that lives at the house, whatever they're doing, whether it's playing music loud at 2 a.m., is a nuisance issue and there's already an ordinance against it.
Right.
So that's, you know, one of the pieces that I engage this conversation with is, what type of ordinances can we draft and create to limit the nuisance issues on short-term rentals that do not exist? And what type of nuisance issues are out there potential that you wouldn't face at a long-term residential home? And in reality, I think that we can cover the majority of nuisance issues on short-term rentals under the blanket of long-term residential ordinances.
Excellent, I agree.
But I think the occupancy is the one critical.
And yes. So that my point of that conversation is, if you go to Best Western Holiday Inn and you get a hotel room, you cannot pack it with 15 people. And the point that me bringing up is, there has to be, you know, that international property maintenance code that we passed last year, because I know right through that it does limit, you know, occupancy levels according to square footage. It goes in detail even to the room square footage to be considered occupiable as a bedroom. But in reality, there has to be some type of something that we can utilize as common sense, where you can't pack 50 people into a hotel room. It's unsanitary, it's not healthy.
Fire danger
is actually safety. If we have a 700 square foot house, again, long-term residential living there, can they currently, in Boyne City right now, have 15 people in a 700 square foot house? My point of that is, you know, with dibbling in real estate is, every time we have a septic field, or if I have a customer that wants to buy a three-bedroom, two-bath house, but add additional three bedrooms, we have to get approved by the Michigan, you know, Northwest Health Department, if they can even, you know, do that currently with the septic system that's there, if they have to upgrade that septic system. So again, trying to mesh short-term and long-term to try and cover occupancy levels, you know, even if we had someone that has a 700 square foot home that lives lives in Boynton City year-round, but has 15, you know, family members or friends that want to come and live up here for the summer, is that safe? Is that healthy to allow that as a long-term residential home even?
Well, if it's a family.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a manufactured home down the corner from us, and it's 780 square feet, and a guy and his girlfriend and their 6 children within it.
But
no basement.
Yeah.
No garage.
There's nothing with that, but I guess
that's where the data comes in. Where you identify these are being used as short-term rentals, so you know they're not families, so you can.
Right, but even if there was. If you wanted to call and have a complaint to the police department, isn't there still a phone number to the police department? Isn't 911?
Yeah. Well, that's the way you get through it.
Yeah.
After hours. After hours, you call 911, and the chief even said that. Please do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But then, what about just figuring out a way how to just really spread the word that, hey, guys, this is the way to understand how, so we can log it, this is the way that has to happen.
Well, I think the reason that some of these 7 people who complain, the reason they don't do call about it is there's no short-term ordinance like there are in some other communities.
But there are ordinances for noise.
You could have a little registration fee of $30, and then you go and make sure there's smoke detectors in the bedrooms.
Let's get in a whole different role.
Yeah.
I think the nuisance complaints can be dealt with.
Yes,
I agree.
I think a factor of that nuisance is a lot of times the location and size of the house. Lakefront house that has 8 bedrooms and 20 people is more likely to have some issues rather than a small 2 bedroom in the middle of town.
I think I would like to circle back around to the tax issue, the homestead. That to me seems like a more pressing issue that the city's losing.
Right. And again, having that data to identify what units
we
are.
We have some sort of ordinance or some sort of.
Well, the state law that you can maintain that you have to be at your primary residence.
I mean, so what defines primary residence? You own
a number of days you stay there, which is the threshold of the income that you can earn. And all this data can be provided to the assessor, and then they can make appropriate changes.
Gotcha.
But that's a loss that someone couldn't file out on right now.
Right.
So.
But there's ways to get around that too.
I know, but you gotta start somewhere.
Yeah, but it's pretty tough to do when you have the data and you have the number of nights that are being rented and you have all that information. Mm-hmm. Is what they provide. They say this room rented this night for this many people, and they give you that breakdown every week.
So we're getting information on how often it's used.
Mm-hmm. So if it's 14 days in a year, and then somebody just goes on vacation and rents out their house, as opposed to 4 months a year.
And starting to get used to getting this data in will just help see how the Twin Cities changing in the direction of having more or less, because right now we don't know.
Yeah,
And you hate to, we're a resort-based economy. So you hate to go too far in restricting people.
The condominiums along the lake have been used for short-term rentals for years.
Yeah.
And that's the mainstay. So you can't treat them all the same.
No.
And I would say that, the transformation of units in the neighborhood is a relatively newer phenomenon. Some people say it's everywhere, some people say it's not so bad, so if we get data, we know.
There's so many issues.
It will be public information.
And that was one question after that city commission meeting. How does someone in the public get a copy of that contract that we purchased with this company and then get hands on that data once that data starts coming in?
Okay. I'm not quite sure how the data will be distributed, but the contract, we can get copies of that. It was added to the agenda, so it should be included with the agenda package.
Right.
The conclusion is, it's 50-50. The town's invited 50-50. There's no easy answers. It's a long-term solution. We have complicated by the state legislation and complicated by the families that were here you know, they called me a year ago, do we have a noise ordinance? Yes, we do.
I can honestly say that the noise ordinance, although it's very detailed and helpful, I have issues with one of my neighbors, and it is not able to be addressed the way the noise ordinance is written.
And I've encouraged them to call the police many times, and they don't, because they think, well, you don't have a noise ordinance. It's like, don't you be the interpreter, let the police
know. I've actually called numerous times, and the police told me that there's nothing that we can do.
Well, that's unfortunate, you know.
Well, but that's why they say keep on calling, because I call about fireworks all the time.
My neighborhood's dogs that bark around the clock, and I mean nonstop around the clock for 20, 30 minutes at a time before she will let them in. And I mean around the clock. Mm-hmm. Like, these dogs are let out every 2 hours.
I have a neighborhood that too.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, the noise ordinances are there. They are meant to help, but it's not always like.
Not always. It's not always
so,
the law that can help you.
If this goes ahead and we develop an ordinance, will that start here?
It depends.
Yeah, it depends on what the
kind of ordinance is.
What type of
ordinance? Sure, it's going to have a lot of input from the planning commission, but you know, first, what happens with the state? That's going to limit, you know, how you can address it. And you know, do you do it through zoning or you do it through a police car ordinance? And, you know, so.
But you said the homesteading can be done now.
Oh yeah.
And then who would be in charge of that, and how would we know?
The assessor.
The assessor?
Yeah, so he's the one that determines whether or not you qualify. Supposed to be.
Will this new data help you in that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's going to give you the number of days and the months that are being earned for each night that's stayed there. So you can very easily prove whether they're exceeding that threshold of income for renting their home. I can't remember what that number was, but there's a specific number. So if you have that, you basically show that the person says your homestead is going away.
But there are people who move out of their home in the summer and make huge bucks by renting it out, and I don't know where they go.
Yeah, but that's not, I mean, if you're just renting it out,
they're still
summer,
homestead.
But that's still short enough to still be homestead.
Right, yeah.
Well, I mean, according to what Scott's saying, and it is true, you got to be within the threshold. I do know a teacher that during the summer they run out their home and they bring in over $30,000 in the summer just by running out their home, and they stay at a campground and a $60,000 fifth wheel that they paid off in 2 years by running out their home.
I totally agree with you. I know a lot of families, not a lot, I know a few families that do that. Mm-hmm.
So they would be above that threshold at 100%.
It's not a bad plan.
Yeah.
So just,
and they're local, so that at midnight you have a local person to call. That's another successful formula.
That is one thing that when I was in selling real estate down in the East Lansing area, that's obviously a high rental district. And first of all, you have to have a permit to rent your house, but down there it's long-term rentals, not short-term. But they did have a rule that if you were renting, you had to have a property manager that can respond to your complaint within a 30-minute time period. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if the plumbing backs up or whatever, they had to be able to respond. They had to have a number to call to get a response within, you know, a certain time period. And, you know, if it's a noise complaint and things like that, maybe, you know, they have to be strong-armed people. But maybe that's the way to attack it. Apparently, the police department doesn't want to be bothered on a regular basis with it to enforce the ordinances that are already here.
I don't think that's a fair statement. I think Kevin said that he just doesn't get that many calls.
Oh, okay, I thought it was the opposite.
And a dog complaint and a late night party are very different things.
Right, oh yeah.
And most of them, I mean, the other, what Dan will show, most of the complaints are happening at two or three residences.
I'm sure.
And there's a lot of good rentals in
town. Yeah, there are.
And it was brought up on social media. My neighbor, they come up, they're quiet. It's a rental, but the clients, They ski, they boat, they bike, and they're polite,
mm-hmm.
and they're here for...
Oh, I have one a couple years away that's yeah. the same way. I mean, there's never been anybody there that's been a problem.
Exactly.
And a good talking point, that I've been approached by several individuals on short-term rentals, where I stand on short-term rentals, et cetera, but in this contract, another big opportunity is finding problematic property managers. You have the CASA in the area, you have the, you know, internet services of VRBO, D&B, and then VRBO, and you have all these different property managements, and you even have people that manage their own, you know, mm-hmm. unit to try and rent out short-term, like they'll leave for the summer to go stay in a camp and that. But spending this money and this contract will help us identify problematic property managers that are dropping the ball.
Absolutely.
Pooling, you know, that 15% commission on managing that, but doing nothing to truly manage it.
Right.
And then hopefully these, you know, property owners have the ability to say, hey, this is a poorly managed company, or, you know, I'm going to drop this lease and go to a different property manager that I'm not having so many issues with. So.
I agree.
Yeah.
And that goes back to calling, if the people would call the police, they can document every call and create a pattern.
So, great discussion.
We solved nothing.
Yeah. Well, just, it's coming.
You got all that?
Other thing, at the City Commission meeting, Commissioner Condon brought up the 500-foot separation requirement for bed and breakfasts. Wondered if there was any desire to change that, so I'll try to bring up this commission and see what your thoughts were, and if so, we can move forward with
at that
kind of change or not.
At that last meeting, I asked quietly to you, but I believe that that's something that should be changed, whether it's the 500-foot rule or a time frame on someone, you know, that purchases a home that technically is a B&B right now, they have X amount of time to, you know, act on that B&B status, or you lose that B&B status, and not just be able to hold it in their back pocket, keeping other individuals from being able to utilize that.
Well, zoning approvals are attached to the land.
Right.
And typically, they don't have any kind of sunset provision, and you have to willingly abandon that use or to go away, which they don't want to do. So to me, you know, I think the amendment to change the distance would be the more realistic way to approach it, if that's
your desire. What are we changing the distance between?
Bed and breakfasts have to have a 500-foot separation.
From another bed and breakfast?
Yes.
Okay.
But short-term rentals,
and were you not here for that meeting? But it's the person applying, it was like there was one house in between the two. That,
yeah.
And it seemed to us, to most people looking at it, it's like it's a silly rule, because you could have every house on the whole street could be a short-term rental.
Right.
So it's...
I think that we should definitely have a... We should have this on a meeting and discuss it, and have public involvement in this. And
right.
I think that's fine. Yeah,
I'll bring it to the next meeting.
Yeah, I think that would be a good discussion. Just to talk.
Yes, agreed. Yeah.
That's all I got.
Thanks, Scott. All right, do the order.
I have a question. Maybe someone can have an answer. Another Facebook-driven thing. People are discussing whether or not Dollar General is moving outside of town. Does anyone know anything about this? There was a lot of discussion on one of the posts on the Wayne City News, people wanting to know if it was moving to where the Save-A-Lot was going.
There has been no indication that that's going to happen.
Does anyone have anything else? Or? Motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?